Somebody else?
Body Gani, everyone. This is Professor Amin-Ra of the Conscious Corner program, and we want to welcome all of you that have chimed in to listen to one of the most important podcasts that we're going to have all year. And we deeply appreciate all of you that come in. I'm Professor Ra, Professor Emeritus of California State University of Long Beach, Africana Studies Department, former city councilman for the city of Compton, former school board member and college board of trustee member. Joe Hembrick is our co-host. He'll probably chime in a little late, but at the same time, we want to thank everyone for chiming in tonight. As I said, we have one of our most dynamic and important podcasts with one of the former professional basketball player, and not just a basketball player, but also a former coach, as well as a person that gives back to the community and uses his experience as a pro athlete, coach, and a outstanding student to share with other young people with his man-child program, trying to uplift young people and give them some insight, hindsight, and foresight. We have the Honorable Shay Cotton, who will tell you a little bit about himself and also a little bit about his program. And then we have a question and answer. And we just deeply appreciate him for taking time on championship football night, as well as, you know, all the work that he has to do to keep his program going, to tune in on the Conscious Corner. So, Shay, go ahead.
Thanks for having me, Ra. Okay. Rigo, I appreciate it. My name is Shay Cotton. I'm currently I'm the CEO of the Academy of Ideas, abbreviations AOI. It's a 501c3 nonprofit, LA County based. We're developing a citywide initiative in Long Beach right now. We're partnered with the Boys and Girls Club and the Long Beach Police Department. It's entitled Books, Balls, and Badges. That will premiere the rollout of the training part of it, skills and drills, which I will coordinate and run. Sometime late January, going into February, it'll be weekly skills clinics for kids to learn about the game of basketball, the technique, terminologies, and things like that, some conditioning, and test their strength and things like that. It'll be a lot of fun. So we want to bring the community together and put a truce in place with the community, law enforcement, with the youth, and give them a better awareness and stuff like that about the opportunities and law enforcement and other real professions that kids can attain aside from sports and entertainment. So I'm really excited about that initiative. We have currently a documentary out. It's on all streaming platforms other than Netflix. That would be iTunes, Amazon, Prime Video, and a host of others. I think I lost you guys. I'm not sure what happened. Let me see. Okay.
No, he just shared the screen with the
video. Okay, got you. Got you. So we're gonna push this initiative. The goal with the documentary, the Man-Child documentary, is to establish a grassroots tour that we've already booked a couple different locations. LA Price High School is the next one that we're looking at. We're just working on a date as we speak. Cal State Long Beach will be done sometime in the spring. That should be a pretty big rollout. Ideally, it's going to be at Carpenter Theater or the Long Beach Auditorium. And we're looking forward to the whole community to come out and being impacted, as well as the university. And you know, the documentary is a life skills component to that. It's a humanitarian story. It goes beyond basketball. It deals with struggles, hardships. It deals with success, betrayal, everything that every person deals with. It's not just about sports. So we really recommend people to go out and watch it. You know, as soon as tonight. You know, it's up. Look for it. Like I said, it's on all streaming platforms, and I'm really excited about the initiative that we have set forth and just the ability to be able to get in front of young people today and tell them my story and express words of encouragement, inspiration, and really peel back some of the layers of some of the hard conversations people don't want to have.
Okay. Shay, tell me, when you say betrayal, what do you mean?
Betrayal in terms of, you know, when you go through the recruiting process, the idea when you choose a school is you're choosing a school for the education, you're choosing a school for the fit, you know, the way the team takes to you, the coaching staff. Ultimately, you're choosing a school based on that man that you're going to play for as a student athlete. And the portrayal part came in because I was basically lied to. You know, my status as a McDonald's All-American was used to get more recruits. And when I landed at the school that I chose, things didn't really work in my favor at that point. There was another plan in place that I wasn't aware of. And it was already kind of too late for me. I was in a rigmarole, spent 2 years to finally get to the university at the D1 level after going through all this scrutiny and this monotony with the NC2A for bogus allegations. So the betrayal from that aspect, because I gave this coach my word. He came into my home and promised my family as well that he would take care of me and they would do what they set out to do in the recruit process, which is to build a team around me, put the ball in my hand, and let me play my natural position, the three spot. And that didn't happen. People that watch my film, you see snippets of me playing at Alabama. I was playing a power forward in conference. And, you know, at my size, at 6'6", you know, it can be tough when you don't have plays being ran for you and the guy guarding you is about 6'10". So, you know, things have to match up in your favor. The cards have to be aligned. There's a little bit of luck in it, you know, but ultimately the fit's got to be right. And that coach has to honor his words that he expresses to the player. And people need to understand that it's a 50-50 crapshoot when you go to college to have opportunity to not only play, but for it to work out. So that's part of why I do what I do today. And we're really pushing this initiative to help kids broaden the horizon, make smarter decisions. Don't just choose schools from an academic standpoint or athletic standpoint, but for the experience and, you know, life after sport as well.
Can't hear you no more. Shay, can you hear me?
Yeah. You guys.
Okay, okay, so I understand because I went through that too. I was recruited as a guard, 6'5". I played around Oscar Robertson. Played guard all summer league. We won. All the cast was gonna be the big guard. Then when season started, he made me strong forward because, you know, I had the heart to go in there and rebound, but you know, it took me off my game for sure. Then I end up being a sixth man. But the point is, I understand that betrayal of coaches recruit you. I remember Bill Walton, he had in his recruitment agreement that he would only play center or something. They couldn't switch him out to forward or something like that. Either he only could play center. But I want to go back to something. You know, you filed a suit and you won. Tell us about that suit you won against the NC2A.
The lawsuit was, we had some form of a kind of a gag order with that. So I'm not really sure how much I can kind of dive into that, even though it's been some time ago. But basically, it was the right for my eligibility to be back in place, to be revoked. They basically took 2 years out of my career with this monotony of this process from the time I graduated high school at St. John Bosco to finally get a chance to play at Alabama. I started at Long Beach State. I was going to play with my brother, and he chose to go hardship to the NBA. And I wrote a letter up to the NC2A, as well as the school, that I wanted to be released from my commitment. It was granted. There was terms on it. I wasn't aware of it. And those terms were I could go to any school but UCLA. So a lot of stuff changed when I chose to go to UCLA. I wasn't aware of these terms until way after the fact. A lot of stuff happened that shouldn't have happened. And I feel like in my heart of hearts, and I shared that with the basketball team today at Long Beach State, in the speaking engagement, team building experience, that, you know, if I had to do it all over again, knowing what I know now, I would have just stayed at Long Beach and just rode that wave. And probably would have been one of the best players that would come out of there. So, but that's neither here nor there now. I feel like everything happens in life for a reason. It's what we do with the adversity that we face. And with that being said, Since those days of me playing basketball, I feel like I've impacted a lot of lives. And, you know, the documentary's out now. It's been out for a little bit over a year. Just created the AOI, Academy of Ideas Foundation. We're really excited about that initiative. It has to do with the ideas aspect, which is the inclusion, diversity, equity, access, and solutions is the long form of the abbreviation of ideas. So we're really excited about that initiative. It's something that hasn't really been met in its entirety. And that's where my heart lies today, in service. I think my playing days are behind me, but I know stuff upstairs about the game that people haven't even discovered at this point, just because of the path that I had to take and a lot of the obstacles that I've had to overcome, you know, whether it's suicidal tendencies and depression for 15 years, you know, just battling that idea of dealing with adversity every day, you know, dealing with yourself when you wake up looking in the mirror every morning. What do you feel? What do you see? You know, how do you feel about yourself? It's not what other people say about us. It's what we say about ourselves that's most important.
Hey, I got one more question, then I'm going to ask others. You know, when you look at your speaking engagements and communication, is it just for basketball players, or do you speak to other athletes in other fields?
Other athletes, you know, ideally other businesses, whether it be corporations, you know, Epson, Canon, I mean, Procter & Gamble, you name it. It doesn't really matter. We all face adversity in life, so we're opening opportunities up. You know, we have a booking sheet that expresses all of that with fees and things like that, and what that experience really looks like. So currently I'm working with football players, prep football players, as well as basketball players, and really even mentoring adults. You know, a lot of the parents of these kids, they just don't have the insight. They don't have the understanding. You know, a lot of them are new. They're just supporting their kid and trying to do the best they can, but they're not aware of the business of the sport. And these are things that we enlighten these families on. So they're more equipped, you know, to have success, not only in the sport, but just in life.
Okay, but Rasha Key, you have any questions?
Well, I got a chance to look at the documentary, and I it was very heartfelt, you know, and I just got to say that, you know, when you're at a certain level, and like Shay was at a level at the top, and a lot of players is not at that level. And if somebody like Shay go through what he went through, just imagine people that's all that, you know, beneath that top level. And like you had experiences, Ra, I had experiences in college that was very, you know, mentally disheartening. I was at one school, I went from a starter to a bench warmer, and the coaches didn't even talk to me to let me know why I was on the bench. So I lost a tremendous amount of confidence, and I was depressed. But I was lucky enough to be able to transfer to Long Beach State, and then I kind of recovered, you know, my basketball abilities and was able to contribute to a winning program my senior year. But, you know, just the whole thing of the adversity, you know, that people go through, it's tough. But if you have things in place, like what Shay's doing now, he's going out speaking about the experience and giving people information. A lot of people wouldn't even get that if he didn't have that program that he's doing now. So it was very heartfelt and informative. And all I got to say is just keep doing what you're doing, because people really need to know that, you know, when you reach a certain plateau, you also have to have this balance. That way, it's like almost what can you fall back on if you don't have that success that you anticipated, you know? And especially at the level you were at, I mean, I knew of you, but I didn't know that much about you. And it just was eye opening. And I just, you know, it's a good thing that you're able to speak about it, because we really need that as people. We need that, learn that balance. So I think it's excellent what you're doing. And all I'm saying is keep doing it. That's what we need. And if I have some, you're going to be on the CEN show, so we'll talk about some things that we can discuss, you know, okay, on that show. So I'm listening, and I appreciate what you're doing.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. Oh, doctor, did you want to respond, Shay?
No, I'm good, bro.
Okay, doc. Did you get a chance to look at the video?
Yeah, I saw a documentary right after he appeared on the show last week, right at the end, and said something about it. And I just happened to go look, and I found it. And yeah, man, it was a great documentary. Like Roski said, you know, I was in basketball, and you know, I graduated in 83 and knew all the players. You know, 82, 83, 84, 85. And unfortunately, I started working too much. I couldn't follow it no more. But great documentary. And I want to kind of piggyback on what Roski said. My question, I have two questions. First question is, Roski was talking about how you peak. And I saw in the video, it seemed like you peaked, you know, I think it was 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th grade. You were taller than everybody else. You were dunking all over the place. And I saw where you dunked on Kevin Garnett like 3 times in the game. And someone made a comment how, you know, comparing you to Kobe, Kobe was more of an outside player, you more inside player. My question is, do you think you peaked too soon? Because you were so great at that age. And like the Southern Geo is... That's my question. Do you think you peaked too soon?
Are you there, Shane? Did you hear the question?
Yeah. I don't feel I peaked too soon at all. I just felt like the opportunity wasn't there for me to showcase my talents, you know, without being in bondage at the collegiate level. And I think people need to really understand that. It's not about, you know, Kobe shooting and me driving. I was doing everything when I played Kobe. I was better than him, too, when we played against each other. The guy in my film is talking about it because he's the only guy that actually saw me play against him that's here living today, since they wouldn't release the footage for my documentary, because I contacted the NBA licensing the footage to get some of that B-roll, that edited film for our documentary. So it's like they wanted to kind of bottle me up and push me to the side like I would just go away, you know, just kind of suppress what I did and on to the next, and he'll just go away and eventually he'll be muted. Well, that didn't happen because I got a fighter spirit. You know, I got a lot of things working in my favor. And, you know, what's driving me today is the things that I couldn't attain. You know, things they said I couldn't have. I'm coming for that and then some. But I got a lot of kids that I'm bringing with me. So it's a different thing when you've got this talent and everybody knows you're better. But, you know, you've got coaches that have egos and stuff like that, too. So that's part of this mix. Guys need to understand. And girls, too, that are playing the sport, you have to understand these coaches that you're going to play for and their character and what is their personality. Like, it has to be somewhat like yours or somebody that you can respond to and somebody that you ultimately can trust on some level, because it's such a slimy business. But, you know, in the opportunity with me, I'm playing the 3 in the preseason. I'm averaging over 35 points a game. So it's not about peaking or none of that. I didn't have the opportunity. I played the 4 in the SEC at 6'6". People need to understand that. The SEC is a monster conference. There's no nights off. And I showed up every night. I was all conference. I led my team in score, and I started every game. Alabama will never have another player like me. Gerald Wallace and Mo Williams came in right after I did and had less stats than I did and both got drafted first round. And I don't even get picked. So, you know, things happen that shouldn't have happened. It had nothing to do with my talent. It was just the opportunity that I thought I had that came and went just because of betrayal, like we just talked about briefly, Rob, a little while ago. And, you know, I buried that hatchet. It took probably about 10 to 15 years after college for me to just be able to be okay with myself that unfinished business wasn't handled right. And it's the work that I'm doing today that makes it okay with myself. When I wake up and I look at myself in the mirror, I love myself, and I love what God is doing through me, where he's taking my life, you know, the way I'm able to impact and inspire people today. Without that adversity, I wouldn't be in this space. I wouldn't be this person right here. Who knows where I'd be at if I'd have made the league and came out. I mean, I could have probably went out of high school early. I mean, Jerry West was in my games my sophomore year in high school, talking to my parents about my future. A sophomore in high school. How many people can say that? So, you know, and then to be the state player of the year, CIF player of the year, John Wooden player of the year. You know, nobody's ever been a CIF state player of the year as a sophomore but me in the state of California since. So, you know, these are milestones that have happened because of the talent, the work ethic, the commitment, and me just being a competitor, wanting to show the world my talent, you know, it took something out of me. The college experience, being betrayed, and just being treated like a piece of meat, it took something out of me. But then what was replaced was like a rebirth of a heart of service.
Okay, the second question, and this is going to go to you and kind of to Professor Rock, because you both guys talked about it, and everything you just said now, the betrayal, been, you know, treated like a piece of meat, and you said it's slimy, you said it's a business. So my question would be, knowing all that, you're talking about the coaches. So the best interest, so from the coach's point of view, he's trying to build a winning team for the boosters, the college, the supporters. Is his best interest Mr. Cotton, the other 12, 14, 15 players, the school? You know, and this goes to Rod, you said the same thing. So what's the coach supposed to do? What's his interest? Should he be trying to build a winning team to lie to get people there? And you know, he said money. So why would you blame the coaches and the betrayal that they do, but that's their business to try to get their winning team for the school? So my question would be, yes. So you're talking about the best interest of the players, and I understand that. So would you blame the coaches for that?
Is that a question?
That's a question, yeah. Why would you blame the coaches for that? Or is it their fault? They're, you know, they're lying to players, trying to get them in there and doing all that, because it's basically, like you said, it's a business and it's all about money.
Well, it's not really a blame to the coaches, because all the coaches aren't bad. So I want that to be understood. They got a lot of really great coaches that have the best interest of the players at heart. But that particular coach that I played for betrayed me, and he took food off my table. It made my life really, really challenging for some years. I'm still trying to get my feet on the ground right now, because the money that I lost that I can't get back in my career. So that's the aspect that I'm coming from. And the reason why I say that is because the coaches have the power to put you on the floor or keep you on the bench. That head coach controls your playing time. So that mesh has to be very important, that cohesiveness between player and coach. And it's a trust factor, and it goes both ways.
Okay. I'm going to respond quickly. We're in different eras. I say that y'all had a three-point shot and the shot clock.
Yeah.
See, we didn't have that when we was playing. Second, a lot of racism was still there when I was playing in the 70s. A lot of schools wouldn't even play us because they said that, you know, Bob Boyd, as he said, he would never put over three blacks on the court at one time because they start acting like globetrotters. He said this on the, you know, out. Then he goes to Georgia, Mississippi, and played none but black. You know, as a coach, he got fired from SC. The thing is, I played for Tarkanian. Tarkanian was always over recruit. He'd have a stack playing against each other for only two or three positions available, only one really, because he had his pet players. And so you saw players really roughing each other up trying to get playing time. Second, you know, it is a very political and business, as you say, Doc, with regards to a coach's decision. Sometimes, like, Tarkanian had to play some white people. I mean, we were one time we were rated nationally, and we couldn't even, we still playing in the gym because they couldn't fill up the arena. We only played at Long Beach Arena our second year. Our first year, we was in the gym. When you travel, you playing in front of 30, 40,000 people when you go to University of Tulsa or Houston or something like that. But we're playing in the gym at home with 2,500 people versus going out. Lamar Tech and Texas Tech, they playing what they call farmhouses or where, I forget kind of how. And these were big stadiums with 30,000 people there yelling and stuff. Then the NC2A was on TARC very hard about his recruiting tactics and things of this nature. So it is a situation where as a coach does have to make decisions to appease boosters, appease the fans, and they exploit athletes. There's no doubt Shea was exploited by his name, his reputation. They use it as a recruiting tool. Second, and they denied him the opportunity because he probably spoke up. He spoke up, or his family spoke up, and they get pissed off. You understand that people that would pick up, and he knew the inner secrets. He knew that they had betrayed him. I knew that Tark had betrayed me, but my job was to get more out of school than they got out of me. Got more out of basketball than they got out of me. We playing, well, we practicing sometimes twice a day. We had to study. You know, I was the only one that graduated with his class on time with my class. So I left high school in 66. You need 4 years to graduate. Now it takes 6 to 7 or 8. I graduated in 1970. That's 4 years. Tark didn't believe I was graduating. Because most coaches take over your life, as Shea's saying. They pick your classes. They help you fill out your financial aid. They tell you what classes to take. You don't have to worry about to keep you eligible. And that's why I took the philosophy of keeping students in school no matter what. You understand? I'm going to keep Black people in school. But Shea, he comes up in an era whereas, you know, the opportunity was there for him to go to the NBA. But because of the politics of that time, they denied him his opportunity. And the NCAA even tried to stop him from transferring or going to another school. Now athletes can go wherever they want to go, do whatever the hell they want to do, you know. But when he was coming along, they mad because he filed suit. You know, you'd be surprised at the attitudes people get when you speak up for yourself or fight for yourself. They want you to just go along with their program, and you become just a statistic, you know, and just another ball player. But with his credentials, you know, McDonald All-American, all them awards, there's no way in the world he should not have been playing first string and highlighted as a major ball player. I mean, that's even written in his bio on Wikipedia or whatever that is when you Google it. I mean, they say that, you know, his notoriety was. So, yeah, you can blame coaches. You know, you got some racist coaches. You got some coaches that have to respond to keeping some white boys on the team, and then over recruiting. And I mean, you know, it's a hell of a thing. You win the championship, and then the next year they want to change the whole team. And the whole team is coming back. They just won the championship. And they want to bring in other players who haven't even proven themselves and put you a sixth man or seventh man. And this is your senior year. You want to be drafted, you know. And then sometimes you come off the bench, get more press than the people starting. But at the same time, the coach won't even put your name in for the draft. So I don't know, Shea, if you have anything else you want to add.
I want to – can I jump in on this one too? Okay, so just to piggyback on what you're saying, Rob, when I went to my first college, I ain't mention any names. When I went to my first college, my second year, we had a white and Black guard tandem. And our white guard, this is my sophomore year, my second year I was there. The white guy went down with a season-ending injury. And so I was playing so good at that point where they had to put me in the starting lineup. And just like Rob was saying, the boosters and the coach. We were playing a team that we were blowing out. And I made a turnover. I'll never forget this. And the coach pulled me out the game. We have a 20-point lead. And he said, you know, he yells and screams at me. And this was an unusual behavior. I could just see it happening right now. And I'm like, coach, all I did was I made a mistake. I was on the bench. Next practice, a white guard, because I was starting with another black guard. A white guard that was on track scholarship, and he made our team. We had three other black guards on the team. He put that guard in the lineup, and it was back to a white and black tandem. And here I am. I'm like, what in the world just happened? I go from a starter to a bench warmer with not one word said to me. And then we had an assistant coach that came to my house that was recruiting me for Oregon. And then he went to the other school in the Pac-10 that I went to. And he even came to my house to sign me for that school. He is a black guy, a black coach, that coached for the Knicks, and he was an executive for the NBA. He didn't say one word to me. The head coach didn't say one word to me. The other assistant coach didn't say one word to me. So here I am, not knowing what's going on, and I lost all of my confidence. The only time they put me in the game is when them guards couldn't guard nobody because I could guard everybody. So that just tells you right there that the boosters probably wanted a white and black guard tandem, and the coach wanted to keep his job, so he had to follow through. So it's really disheartening how they do people. And I mean, and if you from the area I'm from and I didn't have study habits, I was, my schooling went down, everything went down. I was just, but I got lucky and was able to go to Long Beach State. So, and I was able to gain all my confidence back and eventually graduate with my degree. But yeah, that just like Ross said, the boosters and the coaches, it's all kind of dynamics that play into that.
And then when you leave home too, you know, like I said, in my commitment to Long Beach State, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation at all. Who knows what would have took place, but you know, I'm the hometown guy, the hometown hero, so to speak. I have the politics on my side. You know, I go across the country 2,000 miles in the southeastern region. Now all of a sudden, you know, the politics is in the hometown kids in that area's favor. And, you know, they have their locals that they want to see shine. So, and, you know, the California kid that's coming in, that's a tough task, you know, because there's enviousness, there's jealousy there. Like, I'm sure they would love to be out west, too, and be able to come to California and stuff. A lot of them probably couldn't afford it or, you know, whatever. They just grew up in that region, and that's what it was. But there's a lot of good people at my school that I played for. But like you said, when your athletic experience doesn't go well, it trickles into everything else, your academics, your mind, the whole deal, emotion, you know, psychology. And people need to understand that. The mind is a very delicate thing. You know, you can be as big and strong as you want, but if your mind is weak, you're going to fail every test that you face. So that's what I'm about now, just preparing the mindset of the youth, educating the older, and inspiring people, you know, good, bad, or in between. It doesn't matter. I do prison ministries and all kinds of stuff. But, you know, for me, it's each one teach one. And there's a reason why I didn't make it. And I feel like today it's because of the service that that I was called to do. And you know, I'm answering that call. And you know what? I'm glad it worked out the way it worked out. Because, you know, when I look at a lot of my peers, I don't like what they stand for. The guys that made it to the league, that made all the money, you know, and act like they never struggled all of a sudden. You know, when you forget where you come from, you don't know where you're going.
Oh, I have one quick question. It's for all three of you guys. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. What I'm hearing your stories, with basketball, you have all this talent, all three of you guys had talent and play. Is it more of a right or is it more of a privilege to play if you have the talent?
It's a privilege to be able to, yeah, it's in general. But, you know, you when you pay a price and you receive certain accolades and then the groundwork's not laid out right for you to succeed, that's an injustice. You know, there's no other way to look at that. Like, they can't say that somebody in front of me was better than me. So you put it on the SAT score to make it seem like it's just a dummy that can run a jump. That's electrifying to watch, but he's not very smart. Well, that's the old adage too about black people. They like to say, okay, so, you know, the 3/5 of a man and all this stuff. And, you know, you want to hide something from somebody black, put it in a book, things like that. You know, all this stuff that we would hear growing up. And you see it play out sometimes when you're dealing with a coach that may be Anglo-Saxon, that's not from the inner city, that doesn't really know how to communicate with kids from the inner city and work through those trials and those adversities of life with these young men that are learning how to become men in this institution. You know, as a student athlete, it's more than just the athletic experience. I mean, a lot of guys are dealing with emotional issues from their past, trauma from being a kid, like myself included. So I'm writing a book as we speak, and these are things that I'm diving into, some of my adolescence experiences that helped drive me to become who I became as a player, what drives me today. Just things that you go through that you don't like, that don't sit well with you, those are the things that motivate us to be, you know, to be stretched and become more. We don't grow in our success. We just ride a wave at that point. And then it's like a facade because you don't know who's really in your corner when everything's going well. But when your life gets tested, when things start getting taken away from you and you start looking around, that's when you know what you got.
And another thing, see, most of us went to play basketball and that was our goal, to go to a major school, to play basketball and hopefully go to the NBA. Now, many players don't recover like Shea, and like me and like Rashiki. Some of them turn to drugs, some of them turn to homelessness, some of them turn to just domestic violence. I mean, they go through changes because they didn't reach their dream. You have to be able to shift your focus and don't let that depress you and turn you into a person that is just, you know, with a lot of mental problems. And that happens to a lot of athletes all over the country because you put so much into the game that you are more the ball player than you are the human. And you don't create opportunities or see the future. I just happened to see that I wasn't going to probably go to the NBA playing six man and all of that. And I got offered opportunities to go try out for teams, but I was offered a professorship. Most of these cats aren't going to get a professorship unless they have some good parents, good coaching about be prepared for if you don't be what you are pursuing and don't be angry, but, you know, focus on your academics so that when you do go, you have something to fall back on. Just like if you got injured and couldn't realize your dream, then what you gonna do? Well, if you get in a basketball situation where politics and challenges to your attitude or coaches recruit you and promise you one thing like they did Shea and do something else, you know, and you didn't have it in the contract or the scholarship, so you have to bounce back. And this documentary, I know Spencer Haywood had a documentary. There are a number of players that have done documentaries of both football, basketball, and baseball. That is monumentous for Shea to use his challenges coming up from high school, college, and NBA, of a professional basketball player, to help others with the documentary Man Child and with his experience, because they do need guidance. And from our experience, we can give them, it's like, you know, you're able to tell them what to look out for and how and how to get more out of your talent than the coaches, the fans, and agents gonna get out of you. You know, I mean, that's very important. So it's a beautiful thing, Man Child. Because, you know, hey, you're a child, but you have to have a manly maturity about it and the handling of it. But that's a good question, Doc. It's a privilege that very few people get, but we had talent. They wouldn't even look at us if we weren't good enough to start, because they don't recruit Black athletes to sit on the bench. They put them on the bench for various reasons. Once they get them, if they get somebody else. But the point is that very few Black athletes get scholarships to sit on the bench, but some white boy, it's like in the NBA, they say some white boy that was on the bench was making more than the Black players who was starting. But Shay, I don't know if you have anything to add to that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to that. You know, this is a different era today, but still, the racial undertones are there, as we see, you know, with the insurrection of January 6th. I mean, at this time in our world, we're still dealing with that. And then they want to make excuses for that, right? Talking about it was like a some kind of like a not a pledge, but more like a movement, more or less. Like they took a stand, like it wasn't no protest. I mean, how do you protest when you're vandalizing? That's not a protest. So they make excuses, right? And then if it's us doing those same acts, I mean, we're being gunned down right there on the front line. You don't even get to the Capitol building. So I mean, it could be an all-out massacre, but they make excuses and exceptions for others. And, you know, obviously, you know, the Anglo-Saxon community and whatever have you. But we've known this for some time. Like, you know, we're not held to the same standard. You know, my father taught me from young. He's from northern Louisiana, home of, to be exact. And he would tell me, look, you can't just be good. You got to be great. You come early, you stay late. You know, you give an honest day's work, you keep your nose clean, you do everything you can to put yourself in a position to be a success in this world, because the world doesn't owe you anything and they're not going to make it easy on you. So it's understanding that going in, you know, the bullseye on that back, what that really looks like. And then we have a responsibility. The beautiful thing is we all have choices and we all have 24 hours. And the thing that separates two people is how we spend it.
Masinda, did you have a question?
No, I've just been enjoying listening. Just want to commend everybody for giving their, you know, their testimony tonight. You know, to me, it just reminds me, you know, just one of the many fronts that we're confronted with institutional racism and, you know, the systemic issues that we deal with. You know, I was listening to Mr. Cotton, you know, what's fascinating, not so much fascinating, but what's impressive and something to be proud of is someone who exhibited a high level of, expertise in what he did, you know, what went into that, you know, how do you become on that level? And then, you know, being able to work with the kids and to be able to channel that same killer instinct, that enthusiasm, that expertise, that unknown that he has that made him who he is and to this day. And I appreciate hearing those things. I look forward to looking at the documentary, and I appreciate you for just stopping in tonight and, you know, telling your story, because this is enthusiasm is the force that creates momentum. So you got a lot of that. Thank y'all for contributing tonight.
Thank you.
Shay, can you tell us about your experience in professional sports, where you traveled, you played overseas, and what was it like, and is it a difference? as far as the treatment, or how did it go?
I had some great experiences right out the chute. When I came out of college, took my first job when I went undrafted in the NBA, was in the CBA, the Sioux Falls Sky Force. Battled, had a good opportunity to play on that team. They had a lot of vets, guys that were fan favorites, and I was the last cut on that squad. And the coach came to me personally and said, look, you know, we like you. You know, you're good enough to start for us, but, you know, we got a loaded roster, so we're going to release you so you can go somewhere else and play. And I appreciate for doing that. And from that point, I went right into Europe, played in Eastern Europe, to be exact, Yugoslavia, formerly known now Serbia, in Belgrade, for Vlade Divac's team. We had the same agent, so that was the connection. But I played for KK Partizan. That first month was hell. I mean, I cried a lot of nights in my bed by myself. You know, I didn't have family members coming over. I didn't have a girlfriend come visit. I said I was going to grind it out and become a man overseas. And I was, you know, I'll be back and I'll be better from it. And from that point on, every year, it was just like, you know, I had a suitcase after every season because I was going to a different country and a different team. And people need to understand that the international grind is a lot harder than the NBA grind as far as what it does to your mind, body, and your emotion. And it's just it's a constant grind unless you have a long-term contract of not knowing where you're going to be able to call home that next season. And then game in and game out, you know, it just feels like a lot of pressure that is unnecessary because they're evaluating every play, all the wins, how you're interacting with your team. If they have a good continuity and chemistry with you, how you interact with the coach, how the community is embracing you, how you're representing that ball club. You know, are you getting to practice on time? Are you coming early? Are you staying late? You know, all those little things, you're being micromanaged and you don't even realize it. It's like a meat market. I mean, in the minute they see something they don't like, now you're on like a probationary period. They're giving you a warning. And if you struggle, come out and don't play well, that's one thing. You come back and struggle two games in a row, they bring you in office and have a conversation with you. They'll tell you, look, you know, we like you, but you got to figure this out and get this together. Otherwise, we're going to have somebody coming in to replace you. So it's a much different dynamic where in the NBA, they roll out the red carpet for the foreigners to come over. They give you 2 weeks to get acclimated with the time zone change and the cuisine and, you know, get working with the trainers to get your body going. I mean, we do things right here. But when you leave America, you get a chance to see what you take for granted. Most countries don't even offer.
Doc, you have any other questions?
Yeah, another question. An access question on a prior show. Mr. Cotton, you played overseas, played against that talent over there. My question would be, what your opinion or what do you think on how these players – some of these other countries are, you know, are peaking or picking up their game, higher to the level, and NBA are drafting more and more of those players than the players here. Can you give me your opinion on that situation?
It's about the money. It's an influx, international influx. It's a big market there. Capitalism, right? That's basically what it comes down to. The more international players that come into the NBA, the more international money they're going to make, you know, whether it's apparel, just the likeness of certain players, that country rallying behind certain teams that their players are playing for. Where I saw a big influx when Yao Ming came into the league. Me and him played in Shanghai, China together, the Shanghai Sharks, before he was drafted to the Houston Rockets. And I mean, he was the biggest figure out of China, you know. And after that, it was like Jeremy Lin and Gigi Wang, you saw the Chinese influx, and now it's the Eastern European influx. You got the kid Luka Doncic, and before him, you had Vladimir Radmanovic and Peja Stojakovic, and before them, you had Drazen Petrovic. So you see the wave, and a lot of it is just the relationships of those agents being tied to these GMs, and they have these long, extended relationships where it's kind of like year in and year out. They got to keep taking their guys. And I told the guys today at Long Beach Men's Basketball, I said, listen, you guys that think you're going to go to the NBA, start thinking about what else you would do with your career. Basketball doesn't work out because you have to factor in the foreigners that are coming into the NBA that you're not even aware of. Instead of you guys, if you think you're going to the NBA, you can't be losing to Hawaii at home. So just to give them a reference point and something to think about. But the game is global today. The NBA game is much different from the game that we watched growing up. It's very passive. It's very technical. It's not as physical as it used to be. I mean, guys used to get forearms coming across the lane, knock your teeth out, break your nose. That was like formality, you know. I mean, high school for me was much more physical than a lot of leagues that I even played in. So it's just a different era. You have to adapt with the times, but I tell people all the time, the old school way still works with a new school approach.
Okay, let me ask you, you just mentioned something about agents. Now, we just saw this ruling where NCAA, you know, changed where a lot of players can start making money off their likeness and all this stuff. Do you think you would have fared out better if you had if colleges, NCAA allowed you guys now to have agents? Or do you think that may be in the future where it's getting much more of a big money thing now where kids coming out of high school may need agents, man, to represent them. You know, if you have someone to represent you and, you know, they're new to the game, can advise you, you think you would fare out better? And do you think that that may be a future of agents, or do you think, and also do you think you may need agents for high school kids going into college just to represent them, you know, for their playing years in college?
I think that's a great point that you're making there. I can see the reason why. I want to respond to the part when it comes to me with the agent. It would have helped me because I would have had a protective shield in places that I was unaware of when the attacks were coming. So that definitely would have helped. But I want to say, for me, all I really needed was social media. I mean, LeBron benefited where basically I was basically penalized. So you got Senate Bill 206. And you have the image, your likeness, your image, the branding, where these athletes, student athletes, are able to monetize themselves, where we never had that platform. So, which I think is great. I think 2023 is supposed to be official, so that's coming here pretty soon. And a lot of people are benefiting from it right now, like a Mikey Williams, you know, who's playing ball in Carolina, who started out here. You know, he's probably the next big name that's on the prep circuit that may turn pro after he finishes at this school in North Carolina. And a lot of these opportunities because of social media and, you know, the NIL deals that they're doing today, you know, to be able to do that, I mean, is unheard of. I mean, I never had this opportunities. And I was one of the bigger things to come out of L.A. in the 90s next to Magic Johnson as a high school player. So I know that I would have benefited from that. And then having counsel in place to protect me and to help navigate through a lot of these muddy waters, yeah, it would have been easier. But, you know, at the end of the day, everything happened the way it was supposed to for me in my life, because if I change anything, I don't arrive at the destination I'm at right now. And you know what? I'm okay with the destination where I am and where I'm going. So I can't be too mad at what happened behind me. And I made peace with the things that hurt me to my heart dearly. And I think that's the most important thing that people need to focus on, whether it's betrayal, hardship, failure, whatever it may be. You have to make peace with yourself to be able to be of value and of service to anybody else. Until you get that right internally, external will never get right.
That's beautifully said, because you have to find peace, man. Especially, it's heartbreaking. It's like a kid who thought there was a real Santa Claus and find out that it ain't. You know, they've been lied to all their life that Santa's gonna bring you this, Santa's gonna do this. We come up as ball players just thinking that everything's gonna fall in place. And that, you know, you get all these accolades, all these awards, everyone saying, oh, you're gonna make it to the NBA, you're gonna do this and do that. Or to be able to bounce back the way you've done, Shay, and put for fulfillment, make it a mission to help others based upon what you've been through and players that you know been through, give you firsthand experience and qualifies you to make the statements you're saying, not putting down their dreams, always work towards your goal, but always have other options, because, you know, cats be told this at a young age, but they don't be listening. They just think, you know, they're invincible and that they're gonna make it. But when you talk to someone who say, hey, look, man, I was an academic, I was a McDonald's All-American, I was this, I was that, I was this, and I didn't even get drafted. You understand? Cats got to look up then. And as Shea said, you know, his mission seemed to be ordained to do what he's doing. I mean, because he's speaking the gospel truth to these youngsters, and that's a beautiful thing. And with the documentary, he'll be able to reach millions of young people, because there are hundreds of thousands of cats that, you know, have these dreams and aspirations, and they need to be exposed to the problem. You might get hurt, you might run into a political situation, you may run into all kind of aspects. Because when winter's coming up, they play year round now, Doc. They got special people that's working with these youngsters that from birth almost, it's like they breeding you for to be a part of the entree that they can pick from. Some get picked and some don't. But when we was coming up, you know, you couldn't play year round organized ball. The coaches couldn't even coach you in the summer coming out of high school. And so, but now they got traveling teams. They got cats going to Vegas, playing in tournaments. I mean, in junior high, in high school. I mean, it's a whole new different game. And people think it's for the kids, but no. It's like what Shea's saying. They just breed. It's just a breed for them. You just, you know, you're competing with thousands of kids across the nation, but you only focusing on where you at and thinking that's all your competition is. But you got to go down to Alabama and play against somebody that's been chasing rabbits barefooted.
Yeah.
You understand? And that's a whole new different thing, man. When you go up there, nobody ever heard of you. You know, in California, you big, but when you go across the country, people say, I never heard of him. You know, right. They ain't scared.
Right.
That's a different game.
That's right. You want to comment? Yeah, you hit it on the head, Rob. And that's when you know what you're made of, when you can hold your own against the rest of the country's talent and the best that they have to offer. Then you're on to something. A lot of guys can reign supreme in our state of California, but then when they go outside of that, it's like you don't even know they're on the court. They're so quiet. So I call them paper All-Americans. There's a ton of guys like that. And those guys do well in high school, get to college, find themselves on the bench, and then off the team. So these kids need to understand you need to pick schools for the right reasons and understand your talent level and what that really looks like, and then decide what level I really should be targeting as far as schools, conferences, things like that. You might want to play D1 all you want, but your level might be D2, D3, NAIA.
All right. Any other comments, Rasha Key?
No, I mean, it's been good.
I mean, I just got one more thing to say. Yeah, tell us about all the awards you have won for your documentary. Shay, and where people can come and watch it and how they can watch it. So okay. This is going to be on YouTube.
Absolutely. We placed in the La Costa Film Festival. I think we got the audience award there. The LA Film Festival gave us a really high ranking on closing night. It said it definitely is a documentary to be taken serious, that it's worthy of a feature film. In LA Film Festival, we ranked top 5 out of 4,200 films. So it's a real serious piece that people need to cling to. We placed in Calabasas Film Festival as well. And the documentary is up. It's available right now. Go get it. It's on Amazon Prime. It's on iTunes. You know, you can find it on all streaming platforms with the exception of Netflix. And it's definitely worth the wait. IMDb ranks it about 4.5 stars, which is unheard of for a documentary in the film space. And then Rotten Tomatoes gives it 100% right now. So we're in a really fortunate space, and I'm just excited about the future and where this project is going.
Right. Well, we want to thank you again, Shay. Rashiki, did you have to close out with the announcements?
Yeah. On Wednesday, we have Brianna Meek. She's a realtor and an educator, and I'm going to interview her. So that should be a real good piece. She's about 32 years old, and she was in my class as a student, a teacher. So I was her guiding teacher. So that should be interesting. Very talented young lady.
Well, okay, then. And Michelle, you have any closing comments?
Just want to encourage people, like I said, to go watch Man Child, to be a better version of yourself every day and to help someone else. I think that's really the mission today. Our world needs more love and kindness, and we got to step up for one another. In the Black community, we got to stop killing each other and start giving ourselves a helping hand. I mean, you know, our problem in our community is our lack of unity. That we're really strength in numbers, but the, you know, our weakness is the lack of unity. And if we can figure that component out and try to help others when we're in positions of power that have the tools to be helped, I think we need to focus there. That's something that I see that's lacking, you know, educational sector as well. You know, we just really have to look out for each other a lot better, because, you know, there's too much hatred, enviousness amongst brothers and sisters. And we all want the same things. It's just how we go about doing it. And anybody that's looking for me on social media, I'm at Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Shay Cotton. The website is therealmanchild.com. And both of those platforms, you can find the documentary as well. And thank you guys for this opportunity, Rob. Yes.
Right, man.
So let me, can I say a few more things? Yeah. So Shay will be back on. He'll be on the CN show, I think, February the 9th. So about a month from now, he'll be back on with us. And the things that he's doing, it's some of the things that we're doing. So we're going to see if we can keep Shay around with us and join us at times to you know, further his cause, and he can further our cause, which is the same cause. So I just wanted to say that. So I appreciate you, Brother Shay.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah. All right.
So who we got next week, Ra?
I'll call you and let you know.
Okay. All right. Each one teach one in Conscious Corner.
All right.